Welcome to In the Dirt with Bill Sweat. In 2006, my wife Donna and I packed all our belongings and moved to Oregon, where we bought a small vineyard and started a winery. We've learned a lot since then from the people all around us. Join us as our journey continues and we talk to growers, winemakers, and others who help us learn each day.
Robert, most people probably don't know that you were a very accomplished musician in your younger days, that you started an artist-in-residence program at Stag's Leap Winery, and that many of your closest friends are creatives of all types. You also have a very strong scientific background. Mm-hmm. How do you see the intersection of art and science in wine growing?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I don't see any separation, honestly, between the two of those. I think they're very two different cultures, and we tend to think of them that way. But the most interesting scientists to me are the most creative, and it's not uncommon to find both musical ability and graphic arts ability within the science community. I think there's an erroneous idea that you do one or the other, but the truth is when you have a very curious mind, and when you have a mind that tends to perhaps wander and ask questions about things like beauty and truth, you are very drawn to people who have similar minds, and their expertise may lie in different places, in different directions, but they still, it's that shared need to know, that wanting to understand and to draw more out of life, I think, and that to me has just always been very compelling. I've also discovered, quite frankly, that people in the arts are usually pretty damn good wine drinkers. And so from a purely commercial point of view, I've never been offered a canned malt beverage at an art gallery opening. So there's something to be said. When you and I go to the opera, it's the glass of wine that Winterly has donated that makes that intermission so enjoyable. You know, to me, there's just a natural fit. And especially when you're in the more esoteric, shall I call it that, part of the wine industry, Bill, the kinds of wines that you and I make are wines that require a certain amount of aesthetic appreciation, or at least I like to think so, because if that's not true, and don't tell me that it's not, because I would be crushed. There is a lot, I think, to be said about a vineyard being a source of art. It's almost like, it's like found art. It's like a Joseph Cornell box, you know, where every year you sort of search the vineyard for this basic material that becomes your medium that you're making wine out of, or you're making wine with those vines. And so I very much see what we do at the level that we do it as very creative. And I think that's where craftsmanship comes in. And this concept that, sure, anybody can make a glass of wine because we've been doing it for a couple thousand years now. And the truth is, all the yeasts and everything are out there anyway, and if you just pick the grapes, they're eventually going to ferment. But there's a very big difference between a well-crafted play or a well-crafted painting or photography than there is, you know, simply hanging a urinal on the wall. I mean, you could talk about art in a philosophical point of view, but it essentially does come down to a level of craftsmanship. And winemaking is very, and wine growing is very much that way. It requires that level of commitment and craftsmanship, both in the vineyard and in the winery, and in the ownership of the whole, and guidance of the whole property. If you're not a creative individual and you don't have your hours of craftsmanship in, you don't produce art, or you don't produce wine at the level where I think that science and art comes together. I'm saying that a little awkwardly, but But I do think there's way more similarity there, Bill. And I do think that it's the commitment to that awareness of craftsmanship and this obsession with truth and beauty that is expressed in fine art and in fine wine.
That's a great way to think about it. I'm always struck with musicians who and I think of music as being an artistic endeavor, and I'm frequently reminded of how many of my friends who are really good musicians are also phenomenal mathematicians.
Yeah.
And then they get music in a way that I never will,
right.
Because of that intersection of art and science. And so I think when you're at that level, maybe there is no distinction.
I think you're right. But also I think this pursuit of I always like to call it beauty, but maybe that's a little too esoteric. This pursuit of whether it's music or art or winemaking, I think it is also a key component of defining what it is to be human. Mm-hmm. I mean, I look at yourself, and maybe you don't want this exposed to everybody else. you do struggle gallantly at being a guitar player.
Indeed.
And you've been a good inspiration for me to get back into that. And I really appreciate that. But I do. You have to ask yourself, why do you do it? You know, and it's certainly not because you're going to be a famous blues musician at this point in your life.
True.
But it's because it gives you a very definite sense of I think of who you are, and that ultimate sense of being able to express something in a creative way. I don't know. What do you think? Why do you do it, Paul?
Yeah, I do like that. And I think I probably should just say, in the off chance that anyone is listening to this podcast, and before you start reaching out to book me for your parties and special events, that I am firmly in the perpetual beginner category, because I pick up the guitar and then put it down for months.
My point is that if you do it, it's really important to you, and you do it. And I think that's something about being a human, right? There's more to it. I mean, you could just simply, you know, watch music videos online, and that could be good enough, and it's not.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you about the pursuit of beauty, and certainly my attempts over and over again to be better at guitar playing is an example of that, I think. So, mm-hmm. Robert, what haven't I asked you that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I think actually I have probably over-answered your questions and have worked in most of my pet questions. I would like, though, to talk a little bit about this idea of trying to focus on the wholeness of making wine, and which we ultimately like to think of as a statement of terroir, right? So this is a term that we really struggle with, and I was jumping ahead of myself by saying I really think it amounts to an expression of wholeness. It's very fascinating to me, this all that we're learning about the microbiome in the vineyard. You know, this whole concept now that our dirt, you know, in the root system is basically the same as our own gut turned inside out.
Right.
And that feeding that microbiota and making it healthy, and recognizing that just like all of our guts are unique, the gut for the vineyard, essentially, the root system is unique in the way the microflora that support it, the way we take it up. And this is something that you and I have talked a lot about, and I think it's something that we are attempting to understand, and then looking at the winery in the same way, too, and trying to figure out how we bring that complete wholeness of the microbiota of the site and the winery and our positions in it, how you and Donna and your concept of fine wine and myself and my concept, I mean, how all of that works together to produce a bottle of Winderly, is just utterly fascinating to me. And at the same time, acknowledge that we understand that so poorly at this point.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And I think, and I probably haven't thought about it this way until just now when I was listening to you talk about it, is that I feel like it's our responsibility to create the environment where the microbiota can thrive, but being overly assertive. And because certainly there are a lot of things we can do to move our soils in one direction or another. And I think this is where, for me, this creates a struggle, because there's the idea of the terroir and being as natural as possible, and at the same time having the scientific evidence from soil samples and petiole samples that there are maybe some things I could do that would allow me to make better wines from the site, but it requires an intervention on my part. So nutrients are a great example of that. I think you and I and Lee have had, you know, conversations about nutrients all the time. And my natural inclination is to say, well, how do we improve the soils so that the plants are better able to extract what they need out of the soil, rather than spraying a nutrient, organic or otherwise, on the foliar system and on the leaves. And you can look, I was walking around one of the vineyards we work with earlier this week, and you can see the canes are quite spindly and that those vines really struggled, and that maybe if I had taken a different approach, I could have had an impact on not just the fruit from the 2019 vintage, but the upcoming 2020 vintage. So I know I struggle with that a lot as I think about this, you know, this kind of wholeness you're talking about in our winemaking. And I don't know that I'll ever resolve it, but it is one of the conversations I have with myself frequently.
And probably another complete podcast on its own. We could really go down a very deep hole there. And this whole concept of what is best keeps coming back up. So if you modify the soil and the structure of the vineyard to the point that you're getting bigger yields, you're getting more robust wines, in some people's ideology, that means you've made better wine. And I would, of course, contend, but you've completely lost the site.
Right.
And it just really comes down to, what do you believe? What do you believe is right? Anyway, yeah. I do think it's something, because you and I have had so many conversations about that. I just do think it's something that I wanted to bring up. All right.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, so Robert, thank you very much for being my first guest. And I suspect it will be just one of many conversations we'll have.
Well, good.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I'm just going to do a little close. And thanks to those of you who are listening. And you can please send your ideas for future episodes to me at bill@winderly.com. And more importantly, you can learn a lot more about Britton Vineyards at brittonvineyards.com. Robert and his wife Ellen have this amazing site that they are completely focused on, and they make some of the most gorgeous wines I've ever tasted. So please check them out. And we'll, assuming my grasp of the technology is good enough, we'll try to put a link to that in the header or footer to the podcast. And of course, you can find all things Winderly at winderly.com. And I look forward to sharing more later.
Thank you for tuning in. We encourage you to grab a glass of wine and enjoy the rest of your week. Join us next time for another thrilling episode of In the Dirt. Till then, I'm your host, Bill Sweat. Salute.